uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, on Sirius Satellite Radio, on WhiteRoseSociety.org, and on RadioPower.org, also podcasting now on WhiteRoseSociety.org and Apple's iTunes. Welcome to our program. And always glad to have you with us. We figured rather than simply bringing you the talking points of the day, we would actually bring you one of the authors of the talking points.
Now, behind enemy lines.
Of the day. That'd be Evan Sayet. Evan, hey, welcome.
Hey, Tom, how are you? You know I hate that intro. It's just so disingenuous.
How is it disingenuous, Evan?
Because I don't get talking points, and I don't write talking points. So no matter how many times you repeat that, it just isn't the truth.
Okay, so I've got an article here that you wrote called Liberals Breed Terrorists. How is this not a collection of talking points?
It's not a collection of talking points because I wrote it from my own head, not getting any instructions from anybody.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I'm giving you credit, Evan. I'm saying you're one of the finest minds on the Reich. You're one of the creators of the talking points.
Oh, if that's what you meant, yeah, of course. Say
yeah.
It again.
Well, that's okay. That as I said, rather than just bringing you the talking points, we're bringing you the author of the talking points. Here he is, Evan Sayet. Evan, your website is Sayetwright, SayetWright.blogspot.com, right?
Okay, let's be straight. That's my blog.
That's your blog.
My website is evansayet, SAYET.com. And that will link to my blog, so let's make life easy for people.
Okay,
Evansayet.
SAYET.com. Okay, very good. And now, liberals breed terrorists?
Yeah, I mean, that's unfortunately an accurate statement. I mean, the idea of liberalism, which is to divide people up into their skin colors, into their sexual preferences, into their gender, and then tell them that you're not really an American.
Well,
you're an African.
Hang on just a second. First of all, where in the history of liberal thinking, I mean, this is not something that I recall from John Locke, you know, or Rousseau, or the founders of this country who were all liberals. Where do you get this idea that, that classifying people as Italian Americans or African Americans is a liberal thing? I hear conservatives use these phrases all the time.
Well, it has certainly become so much a part of our culture over the last 40 or 50 years. But let's be clear about something, and it's a great question. Liberalism, when I speak of it, is not traditional liberalism. It's not lowercase L. It's not what our founding fathers were. It wasn't even what JFK was. I mean, the reality is JFK would be despised by the Democrats today and the liberals of today. This is modern liberalism, and it's a very different way of thinking.
It just seems to me like you're hallucinating, Evan. I mean, here, for example, on the right, you talk about people who are blaming and who are dividing. Here, the day after 9/11, two of the guys on your side. I mean, people that you seem to love and praise, mm-hmm. talking about 9/11 and what happened.
And I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle. The ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the thing in their face and say, you helped this happen.
Well, I totally
here's Pat Robertson.
We've adopted that agenda at the highest levels of our government, and so we're responsible as a free society for what the top people do, and the top people, of course, the court system.
Now, it sounds, first of all, like you're saying the same thing that Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson are saying.
No,
names when you say people who call names are the ones who are responsible for terrorism. I don't get it.
Well, first of all, you're pulling out two people who have nothing to do with the government. They're not elected officials. They're not like Dick Durbin, who takes to the floor of the U.S. Senate. And what they said is offensive. You know, what they've said, and that's why there are very few people.
How is what they just said, that they named specific groups within what you would call liberals and said that they were responsible for 9/11, and then you write an article, the headline is Liberals Breed Terrorists. By the way, you should let our callers know, our listeners know, if they want to call and talk to Evan Sayet, our telephone number 1-866-889-8894, toll-free across the United States, outside the United States, 503-248-0620. Anyhow, how is it different?
It's different because the concept behind modern liberalism is the division of America and the division of American people into African Americans and Asian Americans, and that their allegiance should not be to America. In fact, the leading Democratic elected officials, you know, the Nancy Pelosi's, the Teddy Kennedy's, the Howard Dean, not elected but selected by the Democrats, all play on that point, that not only should the African American be closer to their African culture, but that America is the home of the Nazis.
Now, let me get this straight, Evan. You're saying that the conservatives, the Republican Party, the folks who's, you know, the we're uniters, not dividers, in quotes, the folks who said, okay, let's separate out the homophobic group and let's pander to them. Let's separate out the gun nuts and pander to them.
Nobody panders to the homosexual community. Not
I said the homophobic group.
The homophobic community. Nobody panders to them. There's the realization that in America, when you have something that has been around as the standard definition of the most important social contract in the history of the world, that a San Francisco mayor should not decide what the truth is, that a politically motivated judge in left.
So you're saying the conservatives do not divide America?
Not at all. It's the
left. Not at all.
Not at all. It's the leftists who say that if you disagree with us, you're a lying liar and a lying liar who lies the lying lies. George Bush has repeatedly said, you know, I respect the other side. It was John Kerry who was vicious in his attacks, not George Bush.
So you're a lying liar.
Who called our soldiers Nazis.
No, well, Dick Durbin did not say that. And so you're saying that the when Al Franken, for example, he says lying, liar, liar, liar. That's a terrible thing. But when Bill O'Reilly...
Well, the shut-up line has happened only once in 6 years.
Well, they know what
shut
I'm
up.
Doing.
Shut up.
I'm asking you to shut up about sex.
What? Listen, cut his mic.
No, no,
hey,
no. That's
shut
the...
up.
No,
you had your 35
up.
Minutes. Shut up.
And it is our duty as loyal Americans to shut up and shut up publicly.
We expect every American to support our military, and if they can't do that, to shut up. Okay. So you keep your mouth shut.
In a democracy.
Yeah, so that's the kind of America you want.
First of all, it's a canard that O'Reilly is a conservative. O'Reilly is a populist, and O'Reilly is, frankly, not one of my favorites. But once again, you can pick and choose who you want.
Who is? Evan, tell me, who represents your point of view?
Who represents my point of view?
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Dennis Prager. I'm a big fan of Victor Davis Hanson.
None of these guys are elected officials. Who are the elected officials who represent your point of view?
George Bush is terrific. George Bush with his going to the...
What has George Bush done to bring us together? You said liberals breed terrorists. Everything I can see from around the world seems like American foreign policy is breeding terrorists, and that tracks back to George W. Bush. How can you...
So it's not that... Okay, American foreign policy breeds terrorists. That's why the Islamic terrorists are blowing up people in Indonesia, and that's why they're blowing up people in Israel, and that's why they're blowing up infidels in the Philippines. That's why for the past 40 years they've been blowing up infidels, and that's why their book says blow up infidels, and it's why they declare the reason that they're massacring people around the world, Jews, Christians, Hindus, Buddhists, is because of American foreign policy. It's ludicrous, Tom.
Come on, Evan, say it. You and I both know that the vast majority of the al-Qaeda attacks have been against the United States interests, and in countries where the United States occupies those countries. Come on, you know this.
And take note that al-Qaeda attacks against America have plummeted to zero since instead of kowtowing to them and appeasing them, George Bush actually took action against them. Think back to the eight years.
How many Americans have died as a result of George Bush's foreign policy in the last 2 years?
There has not been.
It seems like it's been like 1,700.
There has not been a single successful terrorist attack on America or an American interest outside the Middle East since 9/11. Compare that to when our warships were almost sunk.
Are you trying to tell me that there have been no attacks against us or our interests in Iraq since 9/11?
Okay, in Iraq. That's absolutely where we've decided to fight them so that they can't pick and choose when they're going
to
sink
our
warships.
No, it's where we've decided to stand around and say, here, come here and hit us. Here's our guys. Kill them. Come on, bring them on.
I don't know what you're saying, Tom. Sorry.
I'm just quoting George Bush, or paraphrasing.
Yeah, well, you're paraphrasing.
Your hero. Okay, yeah. Evan, we're talking with Evan Sayet, Evan, EvanSayet.com, his website. Evan, one of the authors of the Talking Points on the right, and proudly so. And, Evan, let's take some phone calls here, if you don't mind.
You got it.
Okay, John in Greenberg, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, John, you're live with Evan.
Thank you for taking my call. Mr. Sayet, your logic is very muddied.
First, you seem to have no sense of history. Racial history in the United States did not begin 40 or 50 years ago. It was not liberals who instituted segregation and Jim Crow laws.
Well, actually,
Americans on reservations. And it was not conservatives who fought the civil rights movement. You're simply mistaken. It was not conservatives who, for example, went to bat for women's rights or for the rights of gays or other minorities or religious minorities. The right laid down, with the exception of perhaps of a few religious conservatives, in the civil rights movement. Plain and simple. Racial history didn't begin 40 or 50 years ago.
Of course it didn't begin. The question is, how do we deal with these things? And the answer of dividing up Americans into subgroups and then pitting them against each other for resources, for which language Americans...
You mean like people who are Christian, people who are not, people who are pro-abortion, people who are anti-abortion? It sounds to me, Evan, like you're describing the actual strategies that Karl Rove uses to win elections.
No, what I'm describing to the twisted paraphrasing of Karl Rove's position, because there's no honest attempt to understand. Look, America needs a shared language so that different groups can talk to each other.
I don't disagree with you on that, and I will say I think that English should be the official language of the United States. I'll give you that. I know that a lot of conservatives are on that point, and there's liberals all over the spectrum on it. I don't disagree with that. Having lived in a number of other countries around the world, I can say it's a useful thing. But that's beside the point, and that really has nothing to do with this. Let's move back to the phones here. Kevin in Buford, Georgia, on the line. Kevin, we got about a minute and a half. What's up?
I just wanted to make a statement. Your guest is very confused. he really, you know, the reason that the African Americans, for instance, call themselves African Americans, is because everyone else recognizes them as African Americans and discriminates them in due course, and has for the last couple hundred years in this country. You're acting as though if they didn't identify as African Americans, they would be allowed in the country club, and they would be equals in our society.
No, that's ridiculous.
That's just totally ridiculous.
That's a good point, Kevin.
Are you trying to tell me that up until now you guys have fooled us and we didn't know?
No, Evan. What Kevin is saying is that when people identify themselves as part of an ethnic group, and Italian Americans did the same thing in the 19th century, and Irish Americans, when they identify themselves as part of an ethnic group, they do it for survival against discrimination.
That's simply not true. For example, the Irish Americans and the Italian Americans that you referenced were thrilled to become American Americans. They insisted that their children learn English, not Ebonics.
I think you should read some history.
There was an attempt to assimilate. There was a trade-off made between when you come to America, you become an American.
Certainly, that is true of...
It's like there's all kinds of prejudice against...
Evan, I got to say, you know, certainly that's true of many, many immigrants. And I am the child of one. On my father's side, my grandfather came over here from Norway, and he refused to teach my father Norwegian. And yet both my grandfather and my grandmother spoke Norwegian, and it always made me crazy that I couldn't understand Norwegian. But we also have groups that have used this to survive, and we have to acknowledge that. It's 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The fact is that they tell you lies, that they'd get different names, like collateral damage. The fact is that the dead, they all had different plans. They all had names and faces, hopes and dreams. The fact is war solves nothing, makes a lot of people dead, and a few rich people happy. Stop the war.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 25 minutes past the hour. We're talking with Evan Sayed, EvanSayet.com, his website. Evan, one of the authors of The Talking Points on the Right. And Evan, the point that I was making about my grandfather, on my mother's side of the family, my family came over here in the 1600s, but on my father's side, my grandfather and my grandmother both came here from Norway just before World War I, and then my grandfather enlisted and fought in World War I on the American side. But they wanted my father to absolutely assimilate. And what happened was, when my father was not allowed by his parents to learn Norwegian and learned English with an American accent, he immediately assimilated because we're white. Our, you know, nobody knew, looking at my father. I mean, anybody who spent 30 seconds.
Here's the problem with
Let me just finish the sentence.
Okay, sure,
anybody
course,
who spent 30 seconds with my grandfather would have figured out that he was Norwegian because he had this thick Germanic accent. But anybody who spent any time with my father could, you know, would have thought, okay, he's part of the white power structure. That is to say, the white people in America, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, because that's what he was. And, you know, a good Lutheran family, the whole bit. And people of color don't have that choice.
Well, here's the problem with what you're saying, Tom. First of all, there are other ethnic groups. There are the Asians with whom we fought three wars. We hated them so much. And yet they come here and within a generation, they are full participants in the American dream. There's the hook-nosed Jew like my father and his father who came over. Or my neighbors across the street who you knew just by looking at them or by the accent with which they spoke, and they came here with nothing, having survived the Holocaust. There are all kinds of ethnic groups that America, because we're not this evil white power structure that you portray, but because we are the best nation in the history of the world, has made it a melting pot where everybody can come to America and melt into this one great land of opportunity.
Evan, we
and
both
by,
agree
and
on
by
that as an ideal.
What's that?
I said we both agree on that as an ideal in America, but the reality is that if your skin is dark in this country, you and the reality today in 2005 is that if your skin is dark in this country, and I just you know got reminded of this just the other day. My daughter's husband's brother is adopted and he's African American, and just the stories that I'm hearing from today about trying to rent an apartment in Los Angeles. This is a guy who's a professional trying to rent an apartment. The reality is that people that we're not a totally egalitarian society. I mean, it's just real.
Of course, we're not a totally egalitarian society.
We're not even halfway there. I don't think.
Of course, we are. But here's the problem, Tom. That at what point,
Evan?
Sorry about that. That's my call waiting.
Okay.
I didn't know I had any friends. So
keep going.
Yeah. And
when you're done on this show, maybe you won't. I don't know.
But one more time, and that should be it.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, at some point there has to be the realization that the world is filled with huge unfairnesses. There's Saddam Hussein's Iraq. There's the Taliban and that. There's all kinds of unfairnesses. And the world of America has come closest and continues to get better and better through our efforts because we weren't this white, evil power structure. We were the Northerners who
I absolutely agree with you, Evan. And therefore, why is George Bush out there trying to divide us up into individual little interest groups and pander to each one of these interest
because
groups in different
not.
Ways
that's
in different places?
That's what the Democrats do, and that's why you have the feminists funding, and that's why you have
that's
Nancy
why you have
Pelosi.
Rush Limbaugh talking
that's
about
why you
feminazis.
Have Nancy Pelosi giving standing ovations to movies that they know are lie-filled propaganda films because they attack America. And at some point, Dick Durbin's got to stand up and say, you know what? The American troops are acting spectacularly. I respect them so much. But here's something that
wait a second. You're saying that Dick Durbin should say that when people torture other people, they should be respected?
No, let me say again what I just said.
Dick Durbin was quoting from an FBI report in which
no,
the
no,
FBI,
all, no,
FBI
no,
was documenting
wasn't.
Torture.
No, first of all, no, he wasn't. He was reporting from a private email claiming to be from an FBI agent.
Okay. Well, you know, but we're not going to. Okay, Evan, we got to take a break here. When we come back from the break, I want to get into this issue of Nazis. You're saying that the Democrats are calling everybody Nazis. And then we got to go to our phone lines. The phone lines are totally jammed. A lot of people want to talk to you. We'll get to that right after the break. It's 29 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Now I can understand why you were hot, 'cause Bin Laden never did get caught. So you said we had Saddam to blame. Tried to tell us it was all the same.
And welcome back, my friends.
The years roll by and our kids keep dying. You don't even have a plan to bring them home. Those WMD you promised on TV, hey, admit it, you figured it wrong. So I'm taking my country back.
And welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Evan Sayed, EvanSayet.com, his website. Evan, one of the authors of the New Right Talking Points.
You know, my ego is so big that I'm going to accept that disingenuous statement because I like the sound of it.
Okay. His latest article, Liberals Breed Terrorists, floating all over the Internet and in print. Now, Evan, before we move off this issue, we have a caller here from Chicago who wants to talk to you specifically about the whole issue of Americans of various descents. Ken in Chicago on the line. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Hey, hey, Tom. Kevin, your egalitarian society does not exist. It exists only in your mind, okay? I'm a professional black male. I make an above-average salary, above white, black, or any other color you want to mention. However, when I wake up in the morning, I still live inside this skin. I cannot take it off.
And why would you want to?
Because some of the reason is because
the black.
Let me finish what I'm saying. Do you mind? May I finish what I'm saying?
Sure, go ahead.
Because in your mind, you think that there is this fair America out there that exists only in your mind. I live in this skin that I cannot take off, and there are a lot of people like you out there. I don't care what you say, but the first thing you see.
Wait,
slow down. Let me finish. The first thing your kind see when they see me is this skin.
My kind?
Yes, I'm generalizing you because I know your type.
Right.
Will you let me finish?
But you're not bigoted. You know nothing about me, but you're not bigoted.
I'm not bigoted.
Okay.
I mean, I can use the old cliche that I have a lot of white friends, but I'm not bigoted.
Okay.
I'm telling you what exists in America. Look, 2004, okay? I have colleagues that I used to work with in Texas. One of them being a white woman. A bunch of us were going out for drinks after work. And I left my car at the lab, and she drove me to where we were going. When we got there, she asked me to bend down in the cab of the pickup truck so white people wouldn't see me in her presence with a black man in her truck in her town.
She is living
the reality of America.
Okay.
Don't fool yourself.
Right. The reality of America with affirmative action where white kids don't go to college so that black kids can be made up for.
What are you smoking? Have you ever heard of George Bush getting into Yale due to
affirmative action? George Bush actually got into Harvard.
No, there's no evidence whatsoever.
Oh, come on. Due to
affirmative action. It's just that you guys think in reverse. You start with your hate, and then anything that will validate your hate becomes the truth.
You use the word hate because that is what you understand. You cannot understand reality without putting hate into it. I don't hate you or anybody else. I am telling you the real world we happen to live in. You might think that you have this panacea view of what America is, but I live in the real America, and I know how I get treated when I go out there.
Where are you from originally?
Evan, let's not get into this. Ken, thanks a lot for the call. I don't want to move this thing into personal stuff.
Let me make my point. Wherever he's from originally. Originally, obviously, America's not so evil and horrible that he wants to go back there. So are there things that need to be improved here? Absolutely. But when does the liberals say anything good about America? When do they stop finding 4 out of 1 million people who put panties on terrorist heads and point out that 96% of the Iraqi children are now immunized against childhood illnesses?
Evan, liberals are very much finding a lot good with America. We love this country.
Say it once in a while.
Well, we say it all the time. This country is one of the greatest countries in the world. We had, until the conservatives started with their conservative economic policies, we had one of the strongest middle classes in the world during the golden age of the American middle class.
During the malaise of the Jimmy Carter years?
And the Eisenhower years, and the Truman years, and the Kennedy years, and the LBJ. Yes, absolutely. We had one of the strongest middle classes in America. It was continuously growing. The American dream. Everybody could make more than their parents did. All that started coming unraveled when Ronald Reagan came into office and declared war on working people in the United States.
Now here's the reality. Now here's the fact. 70%, the highest in human history, own their own homes now. 70%. You know what?
I'm sorry, Evan. Being in debt to the bank, up to your eyeballs is not owning your own home.
So I don't understand. Who's in debt up to their eyeballs?
The vast majority of Americans who you say own their homes don't actually own their homes. They own a note to the bank. The bank owns their homes.
No, they
have entered into a debt agreement with their bank.
They mow their own yards. They bring their kids up in their own yards.
I'm sorry, Evan. You go back and you look in the late 20s at home ownership, and where people actually saved up enough money to buy a house and then paid cash.
You said that the late 20s, the era of the stock market crash.
Before the stock market crash, yeah.
Okay.
No, the reality is right now, and this is absolutely consistent with Republican philosophy these days, the so-called conservative philosophy is that debt is a good thing. And I'm telling you, it's a bad thing. It's not
No, debt is neither a good nor bad thing. There are times that you take on debt, like any business does, to invest in the future. And there are times that you that you pay down your debt.
Yeah, okay, let's go back to
the... Let's go down the debt right now.
Yeah. If only we were paying down our debt like we were under Bill Clinton. Come on, Evan, we're borrowing $2 billion a day just to keep this government running.
You mean, but we invested in the military, which was being cut. We invested in our intelligence agencies that was being destroyed by the Clinton administration, putting up walls between the FBI
and
sorry,
the CIA. I'm sorry, not going there. I'm not, okay. You know, it's nonsense, Evan. You know, okay. It's nonsense.
Well, you
the
know
military.
What? Here's all I can ask. The folks at home, you and I are coming from two different positions.
Sure.
Let the folks at home who own their own home now ask themselves whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. You know, according to you, it's a bad thing because they're in debt. According to me, it's a good thing.
I'm not saying
equity.
It's a bad thing. What I'm saying is that the reason why so many Americans right now own their own homes is, to use your phrase, is because Alan Greenspan has artificially suppressed interest rates.
And why would he do that?
He did that to get George W. Bush reelected because Alan Greenspan has a long history of being a partisan. I strongly recommend you pick up the book Greenspan's Fraud. It lays the whole thing out.
That's why Bill Clinton for 8 years kept Alan Greenspan in that position, and under Bill Clinton, supposedly the economy was great.
Greenspan was a survivor. Greenspan sucks up to whoever's in power. Greenspan was opposed to tax cuts during the Clinton administration, in favor of them during the first Bush administration, in favor of them during the second Bush administration.
Okay, so whatever.
He flips his policy depending on who's president.
Okay, so he changes his policy depending on who's president. Then we see the difference between now when people own their own homes and the Clinton years when they didn't.
No,
what
you're seeing is a bubble, a potential disaster. I mean, read the...
You mean like the tech bubble that was the entire profitability of the Clinton years?
You haven't been reading the Wall Street Journal the last few days. I mean, this is really scary stuff. Anyhow, we've got a whole bunch of callers here, Evan. Let's get to the callers here and see what they have to say. Bev in Memphis, Tennessee, first-time caller. Hey, Bev, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Great, what's up?
Well, there was a comment I made probably about 20 minutes ago about that the Bush administration has suppressed terrorism in the United States. It's awfully funny that London, who is one of our main allies in the war in Iraq, is the person that was next targeted. And for any American to say that we're any safer after what happened in London, it's crazy. I mean, it has done nothing to help our terrorism situation
while
fighting the war in Iraq.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that bin Laden and Zarqawi and the rest of the Islamic fascist terrorists didn't really want to hit the great Satan, but they wanted to set off some weak bombs on a bus in London? They went off to London because they couldn't get to us. It's just that simple.
If you believe that, then you are living in a deluded world. Look at 9/11. We never thought it was going to happen.
But nobody backs it up with fact, reason, logic, or evidence. You can
tell me I'm on
drugs. But how
you sit
and
if, Evan, that's the case, why don't we just stop all this Homeland Security stuff? Why don't we just stop spending billions of dollars every week on protecting the country?
Bush wants us to believe that we are living in a world where it is safe in the United States. It is not safe anywhere. The attacks in London, they have more security cameras than anywhere in the world.
May I speak for a moment?
Sure.
You know, one of the great intellectual canards that leftists get into is the notion that the minimum standard of truth is perfection. No, nobody said America is safe. What I'm saying is clearly we are safer. Think back to the appeal.
We are safer than before George Bush invaded Iraq.
Absolutely.
How did invading Iraq make us safer, Evan?
Here I've made a statement, and allow me now to back it up with fact and reason rather than just calling you names saying you're on drugs or delusional.
Please do so.
The reality is that during the Clinton years of appeasing the terrorists and rewarding Yasser Arafat and...
Appeasing the terrorists? Wait a minute. Clinton tried to assassinate bin Laden three different times. He tracked him down. When Clinton was bombing...
He dropped a couple of
bombs. No, I'm sorry, Evan. When Clinton was bombing the so-called called Aspirin Factory, which was actually a factory that was making, they were making, quote, veterinary drugs, end quote. It was gas that was used to kill dogs. They were making poison gas. When Clinton bombed that, all you guys were saying, oh, it's Monica Gate. He's trying to take our eye off Monica. He was trying to take out Bin Laden.
Okay, here's my question. If Bin Laden is so horrible...
And Bev, thank you for the call.
May I finish? Okay. Is that if Bill Clinton thinks that Bin Laden is so horrible that we need to kill him, then why, after he failed, did he just go, ho-hum, okay, let's go on with our lives?
He didn't go ho-hum. He continued to try right up until the last day that he was president. He was trying to get Bin Laden.
Well, he sure did fail, but clearly he was aware.
And George Bush has done a marvelous job of getting Bin Laden, hasn't he? He's had 5.5 years.
He's done a marvelous job of dismantling al-Qaeda so they no longer run the Afghanistani
government. On, you got a 6'2" guy with a dialysis machine running around loose on a camel and George Bush can't find him?
Yeah, that's just so meaningless. What's important is that the Taliban is no longer running Afghanistan, and Bin Laden is hiding somewhere in a cave.
I would suggest you haven't been to Afghanistan if you think the Taliban's no longer running them.
A single attack on America.
Okay, Steve in Grand Rapids on the line. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Yes, I have a single question to ask Evan.
Go for it.
Okay, Evan. You say that liberals are dividers and that conservatives are here to unite. Am I understanding this correctly?
Yeah.
But yet you try to classify everyone into two categories, liberal and conservative.
No, I do not. I do not. And I don't know that I've even used the word.
That's what
you were
doing.
I don't even think I've used the word conservative once in the last hour.
Well,
you know, what I am aware of is the fact that there is a mentality that I identify as modern liberalism that will side always with evil over good, wrong over right, and the behaviors that lead to failure over those that lead to success.
That sounds like quite a divisive categorization there, Evan.
And what I'm saying is that by
it's
saying
not divisive, that's one particular group.
It sounds like you just did what you said liberals are doing.
In other words, I can't have an honest thought about I have to pretend like the Democrats do that we should celebrate diversity as opposed to admitting that some things are bad and some things are good and some things are better and some things are worse. Some things are
Who's denying that?
Things are to be celebrated.
Who's denying any of that?
You deny all that?
Steve, you made your point, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, my point is this, that by saying this, you're being a divider. So effectively, you're proving yourself wrong, Evan.
Yeah. Well said. 1-866-889-8894. Pat in Columbia, South Carolina. Hey, Pat.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. The question I have for Evan is, with the current Bush administration, they seem to be wanting to curtail women's rights.
In what way exactly?
Pat, you got to be sure and turn your radio down because there's a delay.
With the nomination of John Roberts into the Supreme Court.
So it's a woman's right to be on the Supreme Court. In other words,
no, I think she's talking about abortion, Evan.
And what do we know about John Roberts? He hasn't even spoken yet, and we already know he's curtailing women's rights.
Well, his wife is activist against abortion rights, and
I don't judge people by their spouses. I hope to God nobody judges me by mine.
And Evan, he has said that he thinks that Roe v. Wade was wrongly decided and should be overturned.
And that has nothing to do whatsoever with women's rights. It has to do with whether the decision was constitutional, and it wasn't. Look, the reality is...
Pat finish the sentence, okay?
Hold on just a second.
Let Pat finish a sentence.
Yep.
Thank you. Women's rights are more about Roe v. Wade than strictly in a box about abortion rights, in my opinion. What I'm wanting to know through asking you is, if women's rights are curtailed with this administration at any rate, could one then deduce that Osama bin Laden's ideology has prevailed?
That's a great question, Pat.
It is. You have to explain.
Here's the thing. We just voted, for example, for the Patriot Act to reduce our civil rights. That's exactly what Osama would have wanted.
Right.
It was Victory Act.
They called it the Patriot Act.
It's the Osama bin Laden gets what he wants through the Republicans Act.
Osama would have wanted more.
The Osama,
which is for us to drop our guards so that he could blow up the World Trade Center or the Empire State
Building. Osama bin Laden so hated the fact that Saddam Hussein ran the only secular government in the Middle East that after he came back from Afghanistan to Saudi Arabia, he organized a private army to try to invade Iraq and take out Saddam Hussein.
And that's why when his key lieutenant got injured, he sent him to Saddam Hussein's hospital in Baghdad.
No, he didn't say... He tried to... Let me Bobby Fish. He tried to invade Iraq, and the Saudis stopped him and exiled him from his own country for trying to invade Iraq because women were, in his mind, it was blasphemous. Women were allowed to work. They were allowed to vote. They were allowed to drive cars. And how dare they?
And so Pat's point is,
if we roll back women's rights in America, we're simply giving Bin Laden another victory.
But nobody's calling to roll back women's rights. I mean, what you're doing to me is the when did you stop beating your wife question. But wait a second. I never beat my wife. Nobody's rolling back women's rights. Women's rights are, as far as abortion, first of all, if that's the ultimate description of a woman's right, because that has nothing to do with voting. It has nothing to do with where they can work.
Actually, Roe v. Wade includes, it goes beyond just abortion. It also includes the right, for example, to birth control, which, you know, again, is under attack. We have just here in Portland just the other day, we had a pharmacist. There's part of this large organization of pharmacists around the country,
right, and refusing to sell
birth control. No, it wasn't
right.
her own business. She was an employee of a company.
Okay, and as an employee of a company, then he should be fired.
I agree.
Or he should start his own business, or he should do whatever.
He was a she, but yeah.
I'm sorry. Okay, she. That the notion that unfettered right to abortion is a woman's right, whether it's in the Constitution or not, it's not rolling back women's rights. It's answering an honest question.
Okay, Evan, say it. EVANSAYET.com, our guest. We'll be back with your questions for Evan. We're just going to have to make it quick, by the way. We just have a few minutes left. It's 10 minutes before the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
No doubt the Iraq regime continues to possess and conceal some of the most lethal weapons ever devised.
Impeachment, the most beautiful word I ever heard.
War is not my first choice.
Impeachment, 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 impeachment.
I hope this can be done peacefully.
Every beautiful hope for the world in a single word.
The American people can know that every measure has been taken to avoid war.
He will be disarmed by force.
Impeachment, impeachment, impeachment. John Conyers is thinking impeachment. The British press revealed the lies that Bush concealed. Oh, my.
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Evan Sayet, EVANSAYET.com, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Ben in San Diego is on the line. Hey, Ben, we got to make it quick. We try and get a bunch of calls.
All right. I'm going to make one quick point.
Sure.
That is, can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right. The quick point is that it's pretty clear the grand plan is in this ownership society is to get everybody to get in debt up to their eyeballs, and then suddenly the interest shoot up the interest rates to 15%. All these poor idiots with their arms are going to get sucked in and get foreclosed on, and the Saudis are going to call in all that paper, and the Chinese, and we're going to just, and
right,
the Chinese
George
will own
Bush
all
evil.
Yeah, guess what? You know what? You I don't know where you find all these Nazis.
Saddam Hussein's not evil. Yeah, Arafat's not evil.
You're a Nazi thug. You cannot
evil.
Shut for just yeah. a second, you Nazi thug. I'm going to.
Okay. Ben, you know, I appreciate your sentiments, but I'm asking Evan not to call names, and I'm asking our callers not to call people names. Dave in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hey, Dave.
Hey, what's going on? Hey, Evan, I'm going to pick you apart because you're just like the typical right-wing radical. You spin all your argument, pick and choose your arguments.
Well, take it apart quickly, Dave, because we've only got about 10 seconds.
Okay, the point I'm saying, your party, no, sir, it's my turn to talk, okay? Your party has the likes of Rick Santorum, Sam Brownback, and all these other people, and you're going to sit there and tell me that this president and this party's doing well. Give me a break, you
right-wing radical. And what happens when Trent Lott says something that could be interpreted as perhaps being divisive? They strip him of power. What happens when Christopher Dodd applauds the Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan? Not a thing.
Okay. Dave, thanks for the point. And Evan, thanks for your hanging in there with us throughout the hour. Good talking with you. EVANSAYET.com is website if you want more of the right-wing talking points for the day. We'll talk to you. We'll talk to you again, Evan. And thanks to everybody who called in. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, to the second hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, tomhartman.com, the website. Our program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics, high technology for low prices, 1-800-511-MACS, M-A-C-S, if you are interested. Our conversation with Evan in the last hour seems to have stirred a few folks up. A few folks still want to talk about it. We will get to that in let's just get to that right now. 1-866-889-8894, Ken in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Ken, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, I'm sorry that I missed Evan. I just wanted to make the point that there were three conservative presidents that had a great deal to do with the situation that we have right now with the Muslim world and the terrorists at large. Ronald Reagan, who helped the CIA, sent the CIA and helped Osama bin Laden and the Taliban in Afghanistan when they were fighting the Soviets. Also helped Saddam Hussein build his army up and advised him while we were fighting Iran. And then Bush Sr., who built the bases in Saudi Arabia during the first Gulf War, and that was, that to a lot of Muslims. They didn't want Americans on Saudi soil.
Specifically to Osama bin Laden. In 1995 or 1998, he issued his famous threat to us that if we didn't remove our American soldiers from Saudi soil, he was going to strike us within America.
Yeah. Yeah, and well, when was the first attack on the World Trade Center?
Yeah, it was
in 94 or 95.
93. No, it was in 93. It was just a few months after Bill Clinton took office, actually.
And now you got George Jr., who is occupying Iraqi soil at, you know, their liberation, which has also cost close to 100,000 Iraqi lives in the name of liberation. You know, that kind of liberty, I'm sure a lot of them could do without. But, you know, he still uses 9/11 as an excuse. I mean, he couldn't get away with weapons of mass destruction in the first his first go around because it proved that we didn't try to get uranium from Nigeria. And then all of a sudden it was, well, we're going to try to liberate the Iraqi people because, well, you know, they were gassed by Saddam Hussein. Well, Saddam Hussein gassed them in '88 when Reagan and George Sr. were still in power and still were friends with Saddam Hussein, but yet we didn't do anything then.
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely. And then Bush has the audacity to try to, you know, actually essentially lie to us and tell us that the reason that he had to take out Saddam Hussein was because Saddam would not allow the inspectors in, as if Hans Blix didn't exist, as if Mohammed al-Baradei didn't exist. They wouldn't let the inspectors in, so we had to take them out. When, in fact, it was Bush who pulled the inspectors out. Here's George Bush talking about that on the tail end of a speech about the WMD.
Does Saddam Hussein have a weapons program? And the answer is absolutely. And we gave him a chance to allow the inspectors in, and he wouldn't let them in. And therefore, after a reasonable request, we decided to remove him from power along with other nations so as to make sure he was not a threat to the United States.
Yeah, he was a real threat to the United States. You know, he had his son Uday had that balsa wood airplane.
Yeah, you know, and part of that slideshow that Colin Powell put on, most of those pictures were over 10 years old. Most of those planes were already dismantled, and the I don't know, that one truck that was I don't know, they thought was carrying weapons or whatever, yeah. Those pipes.
It was helium balloons.
That was an old picture, you know.
Well, actually, that truck was to make helium, to fill helium balloons that they would send up when they're doing artillery so that they could sight the artillery to know what the wind was. And that's exactly, Scott Ritter came on this program at the time, 2.5 years ago, and said, those trucks are there to make helium gas. We know it. We know about it. Wherever you have a long-range artillery, you're going to find trucks like that are making helium to fill balloons because that's what they use to calibrate their artillery. And, you know, pretty much everybody knew. It was an open secret. Ken, I got to move along. Thanks for
yeah,
the call.
Thank you.
And good point you made. Tom in Minneapolis, Minnesota on the line. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Hey, that first hour with Evan, man, it was like listening to a dysfunctional Maury Povich or Springer show. God.
Well, here's the thing, and this is why I think it's so important to actually have that kind of thing on this program. First of all of us, all of us have people like Evan in our lives. We have, you know,
right.
brothers-in-law or co-workers or relatives or, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, and I think it's important that people understand that it is possible to have an argument even, a discussion with somebody like that, and when you're all done, there's not blood on the floor. And you know,
right.
you may or may not change somebody's mind, but at least, you know, these things can be discussed by reasonable people in a reasonable way without beating them up or without calling them awful names,
right.
Number one. And number two, it gives our listeners, my listeners, an opportunity to actually hear the way right-wingers talk to themselves, you know, to get inside
right.
their heads and get inside their talking points, because what Evan is saying sounds outrageous to us, but it's the way, it's characteristic of the conversations that they're having. I don't think most progressives actually read Newsmax.com or the other
right.
right-wing websites where Evan is published, and, you know, he's not the most extreme among the extremists.
No, I agree with you that it's a great laboratory to dissect and observe the wackiness of the DNA that is there, because it does help win the water cooler wars or the barbecue wars with your uncle. And often what I've used, and you know I've talked about this, you ask these guys first to define several words, since he likes to blame the liberals for political correct language and all the destruction. I always ask them, define the word democracy.
Yeah.
They can't do it. They always equate it with capitalism. So right there off the bat, I get the upper hand that way. And then I go in to talk about these liberals terrorists that he said. Liberals breed terrorists.
Yeah,
like
the
founding
article.
Oh, okay. Like the founding fathers, like Jefferson, who was a liberal, or how about Thomas Paine, common sense, or how about James Madison? Those liberals, are those the kind of liberals he's talking about?
Yeah.
Or I wanted to ask him about Franklin Roosevelt, who saved America, democracy.
Well,
from...
in fact, let me just interrupt you for a second, Tom.
Yeah.
Back in 1776, there were conservatives who were suggesting that liberals like Thomas Jefferson, Thomas Paine, George Washington, James Madison were terrorists. And for example, William, and in fact, that not only were they terrorists, but they were terrorists that probably the British couldn't defeat. On November 18, 1777, this is a year and a half into the American Revolution, William Pitt stood up before the House of Lords. He was a member of the House of Lords. He stood up before the House of Lords in the UK, in London, and he said, "My lords, this ruinous and ignominious situation, where we cannot act with success nor suffer with honor, calls upon us to remonstrate in the strongest and loudest language of truth to rescue the ear of majesty from the delusions which surround it." In other words, the king is deluded. He said,
right.
"You cannot, I venture to say, you cannot conquer America. What is our present situation there? We do not know the worst, but we know that in three campaigns we've done nothing and suffered much. You may swell every expense and strain every effort still more extravagantly, accumulate every assistance you can beg or borrow, traffic and barter with every pitiful German prince that sells and sends his subjects to the shambles of a foreign country. Your efforts are forever vain and impotent, doubly so from this mercenary aid on which you rely, for it irritates
right.
to an incurable resentment the minds of your enemies to overrun them with the sordid sons of rapine and plunder, devoting them and their possessions to the rapacity of hireling cruelty. If I were an American," said William Pitt before the House of Lords, "if I were an American as I am an Englishman, while a foreign troop was landed in my country, I would never lay down my arms. Never, never, never." William
right.
Pitt, November 18, 1777.
Or just, I read often, you know, he said he listens to Dennis Prager, who is a religious sophist. I mean, this guy,
yeah, I know.
He used his words like secular leftist.
Yeah.
I would ask him to find the word secular. He can't. He thinks it means atheist. I would ask him to find the word leftist. If you look in the Merriam-Webster dictionary, I'm looking at it right now, it says to give greater freedom to the common man. They don't even know what words definitions
well,
are.
Well, it's not, no, Tom, you got it wrong. It's not that they don't know what the words mean. It's that they are trying to reinvent the meaning of the words.
You're right. That's right. Yeah.
This is all about trying to control the language of dialogue in America. And that's why it's important that we have people like Evan on this program and not allow them to get away with it.
I would quote, like, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Dennis Prager says, we don't believe in European equality, egalitarianism.
Yeah.
I just tell him, well, what does Thomas Jefferson say? I mean, these guys are...
I know. They're off the edge. Tom, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Harriet in Seattle on the line. Hey, Harriet.
Hi, Tom. That was sure an interesting session.
It usually is. I'm trying to get more conservatives on the program because I think it's just so important that we learn how to win the water cooler wars. You know, we can sit around and commiserate with each other all day long, and it's not going to get us anywhere. It may get us somewhere, but it's not. You know, we need to be able to reach out a little more broadly here and understand more broadly what these guys on the right are all about.
Yeah, I agree with you totally. If we don't know what they're saying, how they're changing their tactics, and whatever, we are falling further and further behind. But I had one question for Evan. Actually, somebody mentioned it in the chat room. I went to his website, and he still looks reasonably young. Anybody younger than me is young. But anyway, they just raised the eligibility for enlisting to 42.
And he looks like he's under 42?
Yeah, and I'd sort of like to know when Evan is going to go enlist and go to Iraq and see what he's talking about.
Yeah, well, I want to know when when Cheney's going to send one of his kids and Bush is going to send his twins.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
If it's such a great war, send your children.
Right. Well, when it comes on next, you might drop that one on him.
Okay, we'll do that, Harriet.
Okay,
thanks a lot. Good to
hear
from you. Top 10 reasons why Dorothy was greeted as a liberator and George Bush was not. The top 10 reasons why Dorothy was greeted as a liberator and George Bush wasn't. And by the way, somebody sent me this an email. I'm sorry, I don't have an attribution for it. If you know where it came from, let me know. I would be more than pleased to give credit where credit is due. Number 10, the Wicked Witch of the East actually had weapons of mass destruction. Number 9, local contracts were awarded to the Lullaby League and the Lollipop Guild, not to Halliburton. This is why Dorothy was greeted as a liberator, but George Bush was not. Number 8, Dorothy apologized for her misuse of the House's powers. Number 7, the illegal oppressor legally verified as really most sincerely dead rather than maybe dead. Number 6, Dorothy got it that she wasn't in Kansas anymore. Yeah. Number 5, Dorothy didn't take Toto with her just because he was prime minister. This is number 5 there makes me think that somebody in Great Britain actually wrote the first draft of this thing, because everybody in England immediately gets that. And I have a suspicion that a lot of Americans are going, huh, what is it? Toto? Prime Minister? What? I don't understand. In Britain, Blair is referred to as Bush's poodle. And his hairdo doesn't, disabuse people of that notion. Number 4, Dorothy did not jail the Munchkins and make them simulate sex with each other for the cameras. Number 3, Dorothy had no interest in stealing the Munchkins' oil. Top 10 reasons why Dorothy was greeted as a liberator, George Bush wasn't. Number 2, Dorothy was not taking orders from either the one with no brain or the one with no heart. Now, gee, who would that be? The one with no brain and the one with no heart. Yeah. And number one reason why Dorothy was greeted as a liberator and George Bush was not. Number 1, Dorothy did not kill 100,000 civilian munchkins, smirk, and then go on and on and on, blithering about her deep respect for life. Top 10 reasons why Dorothy was greeted as a liberator and George Bush wasn't. You are in the middle of the vast radical conspiracy, my friends. Take no imitations. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. The RNC, or even from Evan. We'll be back. Our toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Let's get it started. Ha! Let's get it started in here. Let's get it started. Ha! Let's get it started.
And well- Welcome back, my friends. Fair and slightly unbalanced. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Yes, indeed. Is it the vast liberal conspiracy? I don't know. 25 minutes past the hour. Hillary Clinton now, fully the spokesperson, the head of one of the Democratic Leadership Council's little gigs here. I want to get into one of the more outrageous comments that the DLC has made recently and why we should worry about the DLC. We'll get into that. And as well as the assault on science coming down from Joe Barton. But first, let's talk with our bureau chief in Washington, D.C., Ellen Ratner. Ellen, hey, what's going on in the belly of the beast today?
It's interesting because I just had a conversation right before the briefing started with Helen Thomas and one of the other newspaper guys around just about Hillary Clinton's candidacy and how...
Her senatorial or her presidential?
Presidential.
Yeah.
And some of the things you and I had talked about earlier, sucking the money out of the party, her message, at which point Helen Thomas pointed out to me, Ellen, remember health care and all the secretiveness around that. That's a problem. I mean, she is not used to keeping things very open. And, in fact, one of the things that we know about her right now is that she keeps the group of her advisors very close to the very close to her chest.
Isn't that wise, though, Ellen? I mean,
some people have even said that she doesn't even use Bill Clinton much as her advisor.
Yeah, but Ellen, she has real enemies. I mean, there are people who want to destroy the Clintons and certainly want to destroy Hillary. Isn't it wise for her to play hardball, political hardball like that?
Yes, it is wise for her to play hardball.
I mean, whether or not you and I agree with her policies.
No, I mean, if she wants to get elected president, she can afford to let go of the liberals in the party because they're going to vote for her anyway, certainly once she gets the nomination, because they're going to do that rather than they're going to vote for the Republicans. So there's no question that she's probably pursuing a correct strategy for herself politically. The issue is, though, is she really any different, essentially? Is she different than her strategy? And the answer to that truly is no.
Yeah. So you think that she is a so-called centrist, which back in the old days would have been called a Republican?
That's correct. That's correct. Rockefeller Republican, we call them.
Yeah, Rockefeller Republicans. And so which raises the question, Ellen, that you and I may well have to confront, and that is, you know, we disagree with Hillary Clinton on things like trade policies and her giving in incrementally to the Republicans and so many
things. And voting
for
Roberts, which she's planning on doing.
Right, yeah, and these kinds of things. You know, not taking a strong stand on issues. And yet, if she's running against Jeb Bush or even John McCain in 2008, who are we going to vote for?
That's a very good question. I think you're going to have to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. It's really going to be a tough one. I'm telling you, I'm looking down the road and swallowing hard. The important thing, though,
I have to tell you, press people, if you want less secretiveness, McCain would give you less secretiveness than Hillary Clinton.
Do you think John McCain would be a better president for the country than Hillary Clinton?
Well, I mean, if John McCain was running, if they were running out of the same party, I would say yes. The problem is that John McCain is going to have to bring along the Republican baggage.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to have to bring along his party. Hillary Clinton has to bring along some of the Democrats. You're going to have people in much better positions at HHS, at Congress, at the Supreme Court. Well, maybe not at the Supreme Court, but certainly in other locations. John, if he wins his party's nomination, even though he may want to move it more to the middle, is going to have to bring along some of the Republicans.
Yeah, and that's going to be a tough one for the United States.
Right.
Interesting times we live in, Ellen.
The other thing, of course, is coming up is the whole issue of records from Roberts and whether they will let records from the Solicitor General come out or not.
And will they?
No, they will not. They're claiming attorney-client privilege. How do you declare attorney-client privilege when somebody's paid by the taxpayer?
Yeah, their client is us. we're not allowed to see the documents. Amazing.
Right.
Ellen Ratner, our bureau chief in Washington, D.C. Thank you, Ellen, for the report.
You're welcome.
Great to hear from you. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Whoop, wrong button. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, TomHartman.com. The website, if you want to drop into our live chat room or participate in our blog and message board. The radio home of democracy, Tom Hartman radio program. The fake news blitz is on from the Bush administration. We will get to that in just a moment. But first, Deuce in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, listening on WPTT on the line. Hey, Deuce, what's up?
Okay, Tom. Hey, I want to talk about, you know, three different types of cons, you know, and con men.
Sure.
Okay, now, your three types of con, you have, like, the okey-doke. The okey-doke is something that's so blatantly ridiculous, you know, that a lot of people say, well, you're right, or I'm not going to dig to find out what an answer. You'll find examples of that with your diddle heads and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, your second type of con, you know, is I don't know why I said it. Peeing somebody's eye and telling them it's raining.
Mm,
you know?
Okay.
Okay. Now, you have a situation like that where, yeah, we're sending everybody's jobs overseas to strengthen the economy.
Yeah.
Okay. Your third type of con is called flim-flam. Okay. That's when you do something to blame the other guy. It's a switch involved. Work something like three-card Molly.
Mm.
You know? Now, the guy you had on before, that was flim-flam.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So those are three basic types of cons that are being ran.
Yeah, well, you're good at spotting them, Deuce. You're good at spotting them.
Yeah, hey, so there it is.
Okay, thanks a lot for pointing it out. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you, sir, and thank you for listening to the program. I got to tell you, there is so much going on. It is really, really startling sometimes how they get this stuff out there and how often, you know, and how successful actually they are. This, the DLC, for example. The DLC tells the Christian Science Monitor, this is what Democratic Leadership Council is, the DLC. It's a group. First of all, let's just talk about who these folks are. The DLC was started back in the early 1990s, the late 1980s, thereabouts. And it came out of a very real need. There had been a 50-year, and there has been, there still is, there's this ongoing war against organized labor and working people in the United States by a combination of two interests. The interests of inherited wealth, you know, the Richard Mellon Scaife bunch and the Walton family bunch, by inherited wealth, and who want this, you know, America basically to be an aristocratic nation, of, by, and for the aristocrats. It's sort of the thing that we overthrew in 1776. So you've got that bunch. Number one, and number two, you've how do you say it? The cons, the whole program of the cons here is taking out the economic core of America. The corporatists, I guess you could say, are the number two bunch. Yeah, it's really the best way to define it, is the folks who are the corporatists. And they're saying, you know, no, America really should be about what's best for free enterprise. Free enterprise is always the best thing. And I'm a big advocate of free enterprise. I think free enterprise is a fine thing. But the reality is that free enterprise is never really and truly free. Capitalism is not true, you know, laissez-faire capitalism. Ultimately, the end result of it, and this is, you know, was pointed out by Adam Smith back in 1776 in The Wealth of the Nations, the end result of it is that you end up with one giant big fish who has eaten all the middle-sized fish and all the little fish. And so what we have done to correct that from the founding of this country up until relatively recently is we've had regulated capitalism, regulated free enterprise. That is where we say, if you want to start a business, that's wonderful. We're going to do everything we can to help you. However, if you're going to use the commons, if you're going to use our roads, if you're going to use our water, you're going to use our air, you're going to use protection of the police department, the fire departments, you're going to use our court system to enforce your contracts, you're going to use our financial systems to have money and banks and things like that, then in order for all that to happen, then you also have to pay into this. You have to pay your share of it. And the corporations are paying less and less of their piece of that, you know, and so there is that problem. So anyhow, you've got these two groups, and the DLC tells the Christian Science Monitor. Well, and here's how the DLC started. The DLC was like the Democrats realized they had to go after these two groups to get money. I mean, they're like out of cash. How do we get money? Where are we going to get the money from in order to run a campaign? Bill Clinton didn't have the money, and so they figured, well, we have to get in bed with them, is what they came up with, and so they started the Democratic Leadership Council to move the Democratic Party to the right. This was the whole idea of it. And I would say it's been one of the real disasters in American politics. Yes, Bill Clinton got elected and got reelected. And yes, it has ruined the Democratic Party. It's the reason, in my opinion, the DLC is the reason why the Democratic Party lost the House and the Senate over the last 12 years. And so... Anyhow, as the result of this organized war on labor, labor had traditionally been one of the sources of money for the Democratic Party. They were diminishing, as you can see right now, you know, this whole battle with the AFL-CIO. So these DLC Democrats, they said, let's go to the corporations for money. So anyhow, the DLC tells the Christian Science Monitor, this is where I started with this whole thing, if Democrats are smart, they will avoid copying Rove's strategy of polarization using controversial issues to whip up support from a loyal base of voters. End quote. Now, let me get this straight. Karl Rove, one of the most successful politicians or political manipulators in the history of the United States, who has been very, very successful in winning elections by taking what are perceived as real issues by his base, the people who support him, and just being right up front about them, that he should not be emulated? That instead Democrats should just be wimps and wusses? That they shouldn't talk about controversial issues? That they shouldn't energize their base? Come on! Well, and now, you know, Hillary Clinton is openly embracing the DLC. And for this, I think we have a big problem. A big problem. So we'll see where that goes. Our guest is on one. Hang on just a second here. Let me get back to it. It is. This is our Bioneers segment, and Ra Goddess is a performing artist, entrepreneur, and social activist. And Ra, I'm sorry, we were expecting you at the top of the hour. I had your music all lined up, and I had the bio for you and everything, and apparently we lost you, and it's going to take me a minute to recover all that stuff. But welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Tom, and I so apologize if faux pas was ours.
Oh, it's no problem. What, is it Pacific Time, Eastern Time mix-up?
It is the Pacific Time, Eastern Time mix-up, and of course, it is the work that we do. I was inundated, office full of women, so that's what was going on.
Well, that's not a bad thing. It's So tell us about the work that you're doing, your art.
Yes, so I am the founder and vision keeper of the Next Wave of Women in Power, which is a leadership development network for young women between the ages of 18 and 35. And really our mission and our vision is to build upon the legacy, specifically the artistic legacy, of our foremothers and grandmothers to leverage and move and shape a new brand of social political activism in the country. One of the things that we found as we have talked to young women all over the country is that, you know, when you begin to start to talk about electoral politics, when you begin to start to talk about, you know, issues that are really, really pertinent to the leadership of this country and certainly the state of this nation and how America shows up in the rest of the world, you know, people's eyes start to glaze over. And they glaze over because it's sort of, you go, I'm one person. What could I possibly do to impact that?
Mm-hmm.
What could I possibly do to change that? And one of the things that we've understood as we, again, have begun to talk to young women is that the issues that are most important to them in some cases aren't even on the radars of most politicians, hello. Mm-hmm. And moreover, they don't feel empowered to put their voice in the ring. And how do we as citizens, number one, redefine our relationship with America, two, create another vision for democracy and what it means to have a voice and be heard as a people, and number three, how do we build on the wisdom of those who've come before us to really leverage the art and the opportunity to access places in our consciousness that art is able to do and leverage that into a way to activate people around the issues that are most important to
them.
That
sounds absolutely great. We're talking with Ra Goddess. She is a performing artist, entrepreneur, and social activist, the founder and CEO of Divine Dime Entertainment Limited, one of the first women in hip-hop to create, independently market, and distribute her own music worldwide. Your activist work has included co-founding the Sista 2 Sista Foundation School for Young Women of Color, being the international spokeswoman for the Universal Zulu Nation, and currently directing the next wave of Women and Power, We Got Issues. And I have a little clip of your music here. You mind if I play it?
Not at all.
I think this would be great for our listeners.
I was 10 days on beauty fade, a crack reflection. And in between each twist, she rests until the next election. How could you dare call this a life all taken and no given? This was a flower's frozen heart, no blood in this position. Come dance with Lola, she's the lonely desperado.
This is great stuff. You know, I remember, geez, 25 years ago when I was reading the story of Cinderella to one of my daughters, and it suddenly dawned on me as I was reading her this story that I was sharing with her a folk myth of our culture that said that the good girl, in quotes, was the one who basically acted like a maid and who kept her mouth shut and didn't act out and didn't say anything. And the evil girls or the ugly girls were the ones who were actually on a mission. They had something that they wanted to get, and they were going to try and get it, the two stepsisters. And what was it that they were all fighting over? It was a man. And not only was it a man, but, you know, it was a man who was such a klutz, such a putz, that after dancing with this woman for 2 hours, he couldn't remember what she looked like. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a story of a foot fetishist, you know, and because all he could remember was her shoe. And so it really hits me that young women are really in our culture being patterned, being imprinted, and it's not just being imprinted with, you know, today with modern advertising. I mean, the Cinderella story is 400 years old. This is a long thing in many cultures around the world. How do you take that on?
Absolutely. I mean, the conditioning is really, really deep. And the first thing that we fight for is the opportunity for women to really take time and space for themselves. Because so much of the conditioning is about being there for others, doing for others, seeking the approval of others. And yes, it's insidious in the culture in general, but we know that women have a very specific slant on that conditioning. And the first thing that we let women know is that you are entitled to have your own room and your own space and your own time to look at, to be with, to nurture, to cultivate yourself. And you're right, it takes a lot of work. I mean, sometimes it's, for us, it is, 20, 30 phone calls.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's showing up at your front door.
Mm-hmm.
But what we have found is that the minute women say yes to themselves, the minute the women say yes and really get and understand that their voices matter, anything's possible and
That's
everything's
great.
Possible.
Tell us about your project, We Got Issues.
Yes. So We Got Issues, the commitment and the mission of We Got Issues is to create a movement of arts-based transformative leadership. So our mission and our vision is to develop phenomenal leadership of the next generation using the power of art and the ability that art has to transform the psyche and transform the consciousness. And we are in the process right now, as a matter of fact, of launching our first inaugural Leadership Development Institute for Young Women, which we're so thrilled about, which will launch in August. And then we're doing a national tour where we will be in 8 to 10 cities. So look out, America, because we're coming to you. We're launching in Minneapolis in October. We'll then go on to L.A. We'll be in Denver. We'll be in Chicago. We'll be in Appalachia, rural Kentucky. We will be in Atlanta. So and the opportunity is that these women, for the next 18 months, will be on the ground in cities throughout the country, eyeball to eyeball, heart to heart with young women, and really talking to them about their leadership. And through that process, they will also be coming into their own leadership. They will begin to really understand what it means to touch communities and what it means to encourage and empower the voices of their sisters to work for change.
And for women who might want to participate in this, or anybody who might want to participate in this, how do
they reach you? www.wegotissues.org.
Wegotissues.org. That's pretty straightforward. We're talking with Ra Goddess. It's our Bioneer segment for the day. Bioneers are scientists and artists, gardeners and economists, activists and public servants, architects and ecologists, farmers and journalists, priests and shamans, policymakers and citizens, everyday people committed to preserving and supporting the future of life on Earth, heralding a dawning age of restoration founded in natural principles of kinship, interdependence, cooperation, reciprocity, and community. And we have about a minute left here, Ra Goddess. What's the message, the take-home message? What's the message that you would want our listeners to know about what you're doing and what kind of possibility there is for this country
America's,
and this world?
America's daughters have a tremendous contribution to make to the leadership of this nation, to the vision of this country, and who this country has the opportunity to be in the world. I ask every single one of you who can hear my voice to please join us. Empower our young women. Empower our young women. They are the future.
That's great. At WeGotIssues.org, your website, Bioneers.org, of course, is the website of the Bioneers organization that you're working with. You're going to be at the Bioneers convention this year?
I will absolutely be at the Bioneers convention.
That is such a hoot. That is such a great place, and there's so many fine people who are participating in that. And so,
it is a vision for a new world.
Yeah, absolutely. And well done. And with that, Ra Goddess, thanks so much for being with us.
Tom, thanks so much for having me.
Okay.
Take care.
You too. Yes, indeed. Ra Goddess. WeGotIssues.org. And, of course, Bioneers.org. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 10 minutes before the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Once I built an empire, made it run, made big bucks all the time, controlled the global market, now I'm done. China, can you spare a dime?
Yes, Chopped Liver Productions, Janice Lieber.
They called me Sam. Uncle Sam. They'd all sob. Say, try to remember. We can export something else besides our jobs. Say, don't you remember how much we pay? $2 billion a day, every time. Hey, you know your yuan is undervalued. China, China, please, can you spare a dime?
And welcome back, my friends. Yeah, that's from ChopLiverProductions.com and from Janice there. It's a great. China, can you spare a dime? I have to share with you, I love to read Doonesbury. You know, every day I feel incomplete if I haven't read the comics. I remember back in the old days when I used to teach marketing and advertising, remembering that the top five things that people read in the newspaper, that 80% of all people who read the newspaper read nothing more than one or more of these five things. The first page of the main news section, the first page of the sports section, the classified ads, the comics, and the obituaries. I'm sorry. Instead of the classified ads, it should have been the advice column. The advice column. So, anyhow, I like to read the comics. What can I say? And Doonesbury is my favorite. This is the Doonesbury strip from 25 years ago today. Today. Zonker is signing up for his selective service. These guys are in college 25 years ago. He's signing up for selective service. And he says, why am I doing this? Now you've got me for life. And the recruiter says, thank you, sir. And he says, I'll be the first called up. I know it. And he says, excuse me, young man, you forgot to answer the question on the back. And Zonker says, oh, sorry. And then he reads the question. If called upon your country, would you be willing to give your life to protect the interests of U.S. oil companies? And Zonker yells, oil companies? And the guy says, it's only hypothetical, sir. We're just trying to get a head count. 25 years ago today, Doonesbury. Would you be willing to, if called up, would you be willing to give your life to protect the interests of U.S. oil companies? The draft board question. Amazing. Yes. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. You're in the middle of the vast radical middle conspiracy, the True People's Radio, the place where smart people get their news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, TomHartman.com. The website, if you want to drop into our live chat room. Welcome back, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman broadcasting live from coast to coast on Sirius Satellite Radio, podcasting on WhiteRoseSociety.org and on Apple's iTunes, and broadcasting around the planet on RadioPower.org. Larry Johnson is a former CIA agent, operative? What's the official word there, Larry?
Correct term is officer. Agents are actually people from other countries that we recruit to be spies.
Ah, okay.
So that's one of those technical terms, but... You know, too much television, people call them agents.
There you go. So you're a former CIA officer and a founding member of, is it Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity?
Yes.
Yes, okay. And I find it fascinating. We had booked you to be on the program a few days ago, had no idea this was going to happen. But this morning, it appears that there's an organized attack going on against you. Several of the right-wing websites are getting their talking points to attack you. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah, no, they're pretty pathetic because what they're doing is recycling the first attack from 2 years ago that was launched by the Wall Street Journal editorial page, and they're almost repeating that thing verbatim, and that was launched in response to my first defense of Valerie Plame. When the news of that came out in September of that year.
This is really, you know, just quite startling to me, or actually not. It's sad, I guess, is the better word, that the GOP marginers, Crooks and Liars, for example, has it. They talk about the smear campaign against Larry Johnson, the outspoken former CIA agent who is appalled at the treatment of Valerie Plame. And now they're also now starting to attack Patrick Fitzgerald. I find that interesting.
But boy, listen. If you think I'm tough to deal with, man, Fitzgerald, he's a beast.
Yeah.
I mean, he took down the Daily Machine.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. No, he went after Mayor Daley's two cronies. Hey, he's an equal opportunity prosecutor.
Yeah.
This guy's a straight arrow. I've been impressed with the integrity that he's brought to the process and the fact that these bullies on the right feel that they will try to intimidate people. I mean, well, I just got my notification from a clown named Kenneth Parody, who informed me that I must be a member of the Hate America Club.
Yeah, yeah. I get email like that all the time. You just have to. It's called white mail in the direct mail business. Ignore it or blow it off. Senator Pat Roberts, a Republican from Kansas, apparently is going to be looking into Fitzgerald. He told the Senate committee he's going to review Fitzgerald and the Plame case. Has he come after you yet?
No. I've already gone after him, so I don't think it'll be too long before. You know, I wish you'd spend more time investigating why we've got kids dying over in Iraq based on lies.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's where all the focus is efforts.
And then you got Ken Melman going after you, too, the head of the Republican National Party. I mean, this is just...
Has he finally come out? Because, you know, they were cowering as of last Friday and Saturday. They didn't know what to say.
Yeah. Well, I don't actually have a specific quote from him, so maybe I'm speaking prematurely.
So far they've been they've been the cowards they are. They don't mind going after a woman who can't defend herself. But come after some guys who aren't in any constraints, and then they start having second thoughts. They get nervous feet.
Yeah, we have the phony reporter, Jeff Gannon, the male prostitute who spent so much time in the White House over the last 2 years. He says, but Johnson did offer his opinions, blah-de-blah, and piece titled Declining Terrorist Threat. Johnson said that except for pursuing business interests in some dangerous places, Americans have little to fear from terrorism.
And I think that's not only is that still right, I would encourage all of your listeners, go out and read the piece.
Mm-hmm.
And, let's have a healthy debate on it. But to get to a place in this country that you can't debate ideas and you can't have differences of opinion without being accused of hating America, if these clowns think I'm going to back down to that kind of garbage, they picked the wrong man to pick a fight with.
And
I'm not going to be intimidated by this.
And the original fight, Larry Johnson, was your coming to the defense of a fellow CIA officer who was being attacked by, now we learn, Karl Rove and Scooter Libby, the number two persons in George Bush's office and in Dick Cheney's office.
That's correct.
And then in July 10th, 2001, you wrote this article, The Declining Terrorist Threat. There are really kind of two issues here that I'd love to just talk with you about for a minute. The first is what's the status of the situation with regard to the investigation of Valerie Plame? And you're defending her, and what has happened to you as a result of that?
Oh, well, the best thing about, let's start where the investigation is. Patrick Fitzgerald's pursuing the investigation, and he's keeping leaks out of the paper, and the information that is getting out there is coming from people who've testified before the grand jury who are fully entitled to talk about it. As far as what's happening to me, the best thing that happens to me is while there's a small group of nuts out there that want to come out and try to attack your patriotism and claim that you're somehow anti-American for telling the truth, that when you try to protect an intelligence officer who was outed, you're called a hate America guy, and so I guess by their definition, if you out an intelligence operative, you're a patriot. They've gone completely George Orwell on us.
Well, I think they went George Orwell on us a couple of years ago.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. But, the best part of this is there are really a lot of Americans out there who are reaching out to say, hey, thanks a lot. We appreciate you standing up. I've got notes from people who are Republicans, Democrats, independents across the board. And so, there's still a heart and a soul in America out there. That's what we need to tap into. I mean, it shouldn't be a bad thing to be a liberal or a conservative. You should be able to be either one and have the freedom to debate ideas, but not this scorched earth fascism that these characters are trying to tout.
Yes.
I will not stand for it.
Well said. Speaking of George Orwell, here, George Bush, just, lest we forget.
That when we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
Yeah.
Yeah, war is peace.
It's literally right out of Orwell.
Yeah, no,
literally.
George should have spent more time, hitting the books instead of hitting the frat parties back when he was at Yale, so he would understand that he is coining Orwell. I mean, the irony of that is just, a new definition of irony.
Yeah, yeah. And these guys here, the Project for New American Century, the folks who back in 98 told us we need a new Pearl Harbor event in order to provoke an attack against Iraq, which would then secure the Middle East for us in their mind. 31 minutes after Jeff Gannon writes a piece trashing you at 11:40 a.m., 31 minutes later in the Project for New American Century, Gary Schmidt posts on Rupert Murdoch's Daily Standard a piece on July 10, 2001, 2 months before the attacks in the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. Johnson wrote an op-ed for the New York Times, The Declining Terrorist Threat, in which he argued that Americans were bedeviled by fantasies of terrorism, blah-de-blah-de-blah.
What's really so funny about that is, well, after that article had appeared and Murdoch was aware of it, Murdoch's folks hired me at Fox News as an expert commentator.
Interesting. Are you still there by any chance?
No, they took me down. If you saw the video out Fox, they took me down because they had asked me the question about the war in Iraq, and I said going into Iraq would represent a diversion in the war on terrorism and would sap our resources. Turned out I was right, but when I said that, they took me off the air and wouldn't let me back on.
Remarkable. We're talking with Larry Johnson, former CIA officer, co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, an outspoken defender of Valerie Plame and other CIA officers who have been outed and in danger, their lives put in danger by the actions of a traitor within the administration, within the Bush administration. Traitor unknown for sure, but it certainly appears to be traitors, and they appear to be Scooter Libby, the assistant to Dick Cheney, and Karl Rove, the assistant to George Bush. And Larry, Nick in Pittsburgh has a question for you, if you don't mind taking a call.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Hey, Nick, what's up?
Hi, Larry. And Tom, I actually don't have a question, but I do have a comment. When you just made the comment about the clowns, and to make them realize that we're not going away, we're not backing down, and we're here to stay. In 5 years of all this hubris and the contrivances, I noticed that the party that's diminishing and the arguments they're gaining and having less of support are the arguments coming from the right. And so just to validate and to weigh in, I think it's extremely crucial for them to know. I'm not going anywhere, and I don't believe anybody else is right now. So, you know, I don't know if they figured that into their equation before they started this mess, but they have to know it now for sure.
Well said, Nick. I think these guys have been believing their own rhetoric. We are real. We are patriots. We love our country. We are Americans, and we're not going anywhere.
Now, this bullying has got to stop. This notion that you can try to intimidate people and shut them down. And look, they did it against Paul O'Neill. They did it against Eric Shinseki. They did it against Thomas White. They were doing it to their own people.
Right.
And you know, and they've done it to. They've tried to do it to intelligence officers at both INR and at the CIA. And there's some of us who have come out now in public, and we're not going to take it. You know, this has got to stop. There's a room in here, and let's give some credit where credit's due. Conservative Republican out of Michigan, Hoekstra, he came out yesterday and condemned this outing of Valerie Plame. So there are still some Republicans out there that thankfully...
Isn't he the first Republican member of the House of Representatives to have done so, though?
Yes, I think so. And God, you know, good on him. God bless him.
Yeah, yeah. It's... Now, Patrick Fitzgerald wraps his investigation up at the end of October. Is that right, or is it the beginning of October?
That's my understanding. Somewhere towards the end of October is when the term of the grand jury expires.
Yeah,
I'm not a lawyer on that, so I don't.
Sure. Is this the only problem that the CIA has? I mean, it seems to me that when Porter Goss came in, there was some kind of an agenda behind the agenda. I mean, bring in a guy who's a political hack, who he does have CIA experience, but bring in a guy who you know, has party loyalty first and foremost, and all of a sudden there were people fleeing the agency. What was that about?
Well, they've always actually had a fairly large turnover of personnel out there. That's one of those things that's been a big hidden secret. After a rough start, what some of my friends tell me on the inside is that so far Porter's been doing okay. They don't feel the political heat, but what they keep hearing is that he is distraught over the fact that he feels like he got sandbagged on the National Intelligence Director issue and that his influence has been dramatically curtailed. And so he's not a happy camper about that.
Okay, we're talking with Larry Johnson. Larry, we've got about a minute and a half before we've got to take a break, and we've got a caller from Paris, France on the line. Joe in France, you're on live with Larry Johnson.
Hello, Tom. I have a question for Larry Johnson. I saw the entire hearing, the congressional hearing last Friday on C-SPAN, and I wanted, first of all, to express my admiration and for the courage of Mr. Johnson and his colleagues there. One thing I did notice was that all of the witnesses were in fact retired CIA.
Right.
And my question is, what is it going to take for people who are actually in the CIA to come and express similar sentiments and disappointment with the government? You made a comment which was extremely poignant about the Republicans, which was you were waiting for one of them to call the ugly dog an ugly dog.
Yeah.
What's it going to take for people who've got something to lose to follow your lead?
That's a great question, Joe. Larry, we've got to take a break for just a second. Can you stick with us over the break?
Yeah, I can stick with you and
okay.
Give you an answer.
Okay, great. And then we can get into that answer. Joe, thanks for calling, taking the time to call us from Paris, France. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, tomhartman.com, the website if you want to drop into our live chat room and visit. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be back in just a few moments.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
The Pentagon is looking for the culprit. Someone who had access to the pictures. Such a terrible breach of security. The Pentagon is very concerned. The photographs were published by a British tabloid. Somehow they got access to the pictures of Saddam Hussein in his underwear. The Pentagon is very concerned. I'm not making this up.
Truth is stranger than fiction.
This is the world that we live in.
And welcome. No, she's not making it up. 26 minutes past the hour. Tom Hart, 25 and change. 25 minutes and 15 seconds past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Larry Johnson, a former CIA officer and a co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Larry, a question from Santa Cruz, Xavier in Santa Cruz for you. But first, you wanted to answer the question of our previous caller.
Real quick, what has to happen is a bunch of those people have to win the lottery, because unless they've got a guaranteed source of income, many aren't willing to put their families' livelihoods at risk, knowing that they'll be punished and not have some money to fall back on.
Wouldn't a current employee of the CIA, if they were to speak out on these kinds of issues, also be in violation of the you know, confidentiality agreements that they sign when they become an officer?
They get them on a whole host of things, so they're just forced to be quiet. I mean, frankly, that's part of the reason that Val Wilson can't stand up to defend herself.
Is because she's a current employee of the of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Right.
And so, you know, good on you for standing up on her behalf. Xavier in Santa Cruz has a quick question for you. Hey, Xavier.
Hey, hi. Yeah, I got this docudrama called Last Best Chance. It's about Al-Qaeda, and it's based on real information, some of which may have already happened. It's talking about getting materials to make an actual, not a dirty bomb, but an actual nuclear device.
Yeah.
And one of the things in the movie, it talks about a plan called American Hiroshima.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I heard on, is it Air America or Radio Power, one of these progressive things, I thought I heard some information saying that's actually happening, that there's they've actually got information about nuclear materials. And I'm just wondering, is that some kind of a War of the Worlds kind of play that I heard, or is that actually something that they have information that those materials are, those bombs are actually here?
Well, the bombs aren't here. I just had lunch with a buddy of mine who used to run the nuclear emergency search team. He's a retired military special operations officer. What he was telling me was, yeah, they could probably get access to some nuclear material, but there are other parts of the process that would require really the significant support of a state like Pakistan and several scientists in order to pull it off. And it'd be very, very difficult to do. So it's highly unlikely. But, you know, look, we need to still have intelligence officers out there looking for these people, and that's what they compromised when they outed Valerie Plame. Does everyone get this?
There you go.
I mean, for God's sake, that's the kind of person they outed, the very person who's looking to stop that from happening. Sorry to get so excited, but it drives me crazy.
That's and appropriately so. I think it drives all of us crazy. Larry, we've got about 30 seconds left. Very quickly, you suggested that we are, you know, the terrorism is not a huge threat in your article back a few years ago. You want to comment on that?
Well, it wasn't a huge threat back then. It was an isolated local threat. Bin Laden had put out lots of calls for people to rally around him. Nobody was rallying. That's not the case right now. Our invasion in Iraq has provided a fuse that's been lit, and it's attracting Islamic zealots from around the world. And we've seen over the last 2 years the number of terrorist incidents are at their highest level in history. Since we've been keeping records, they're going up, not down. And that's not how you win a war on terrorism. That's how you lose.
And this is the direct consequence in your mind of our invasion of Iraq and our occupation of Iraq.
There's no doubt of that. There's absolutely no doubt. It's just an empirical fact.
Do you think that that's a consensus that's held by most intelligence agents, even current?
Yes.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. Okay. Larry Johnson, former CIA officer. Thank you so much for being with us, Larry, and for your service to your country. Keep up the great work and keep speaking out.
Yes, sir.
It's an honor talking with you. Larry Johnson, former CIA officer. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour. This is the Democracy Zone, talk radio for the rest of us.
relentlessly exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
Third time I've said that. I'll probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in, to kind of catapult the propaganda.
You gave them the old razzle dazzle. You razzle dazzled them.
Oh, George, you did so well.
You gave them an act with lots of flash in it. Made them believe you were compassionate.
We thought you were.
Gave them the old hocus pocus. You misdirected them. With 9/11 and Saddam Hussein. You played them both right to perfection, despite the fact there's no connection. You razzle-dazzled them, let those blue states complain.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
Just so long as I'm the dictator, yes, yeah, indeed. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number, TomHartman.com. The website, Will in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Will, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, thanks. Thanks a lot.
What's up?
Want to ask you, I need some information. How much oil is Halliburton pumping out of there?
Out of Iraq?
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
Right.
Nobody knows for two reasons. One, for a large portion of the time that we've been pumping oil out of there, it wasn't metered at all. And two, the time that it was metered in the very beginning and right now, it's a state secret. It's national security.
Okay. Next is they got a contract again for about $1 billion to support the war, box lunches. Did you see that? What was the figure on that?
I'm sorry. You know, Will, if I'd known you were going to ask the questions, I could get the information. We've certainly done it in previous programs, but I don't have this stuff memorized. I can tell you one of the interesting things is that before Dick Cheney became president, Halliburton was losing money. It was losing money in large part because he acquired Dresser Industries with this huge asbestos liability. Now, you got George Bush running around talking about frivolous asbestos lawsuits, and people out there like my father, who worked in a steel mill 30 years ago, 50 years ago, and now has mesothelioma, asbestos-caused lung cancer. These people, if they want to sue, it's a frivolous lawsuit in Bush's mind. And Halliburton was losing money, and then we had this war, and all of a sudden Halliburton is making money. You know, I can tell you that.
Tom?
Yeah.
I did not know you come from a blue collar background.
Yeah, I do. I grew up in Lansing, Michigan, and myself and my four brothers in a three-bedroom house and in a working-class neighborhood. My dad worked in steel in a tool and die shop.
Showtime, buddy.
Listen, yeah.
I heard. I don't have the figure, so I can't be honest with you. It was they just got it about a month ago. Halliburton got a $1 billion contract for supplying the war. You mentioned Doonesbury, Tom.
Yes, sir.
I saved this. I swear, I loved him. I've been reading him for ever since he was in the papers, you know?
Yeah.
Tell me if this is true. I saved it. September the 4th. This is Bushism. September 4th, 2001. I stood in the ruins of the Twin Towers. It's a day I will never forget. He said this on October 18, 2004. Is that true?
I don't know. You know, I don't know. Well, again, I'm sorry, I don't have all of history memorized. A good chunk of it, but not all of it.
Hey, Tom.
So, yeah.
I am so ashamed. I am ashamed that I have a president of the a president who represents the American people, who has the vocabulary and the eloquence of a sixth grade dropout.
Yeah, well, I'm with you on that, and I think it's tragic, and I appreciate your call, by the way. Thank you very much for calling in. Yes, and can't pronounce nuclear. Although some Republicans are starting to pronounce it nuclear, or however George says it. I can't even say it the way he says it. Here's an interesting, by the way, let me just, you know, speaking of statistics and information, here's an interesting juxtaposition, a little interesting graph that we saw. The number of times that stories appeared, this is using Google News, a brief history of the Roe and Roberts stories. And how often Karl Rove appears in the newspapers. Okay, Saturday, July 9th, Karl Rove, 9 times. July 10th, 74 times. July 11th, 628 times. The story's starting to pick up traction now, right? July 12th, 1,020 times. July 13th, 1,130 times. July 14th, 1,210 times. July 15th, 780 times. And then over the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, Saturday 257, Sunday 759. Back to the weekday, Monday, Karl Rove again appears 970 times. And then on Tuesday, 1,460 times. And then John Roberts gets rolled out on that Tuesday, July 19th. And the next day, John Roberts is mentioned 2,030 times, Karl Rove only 579. Thursday, the 21st of July, John Roberts 1,670 times, Karl Rove only 244. Friday, the July 22nd, John Roberts mentioned 1,370 times, Karl Rove only 277. Saturday, July 23rd, John Roberts 443, Karl Rove 333. Sunday, July 24th, so Karl Rove is still in the 200s. So it seems that the campaign is starting to work. And, let's support John Roberts' campaign. And, you know, let us not forget that George W. Bush, his comment, as it were, his response, his lie. Every now and then, you know, it's like George Bush presents you with the problem. Where, how do you characterize this? What would you call this? This is George Bush's response to the question. This was last year. It looks like somebody in a senior administration official in your administration committed treason. What are you going to do about it?
And I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Now, you know, Bush went on to say, I hope we find the person, and, you know, I want to get to the bottom of this. And yeah, but I don't have any idea. That's the tragedy of it, George. That is absolutely the tragedy of it. CAFTA, by the way. Oh, before I get to CAFTA, I want to share with you this one thing. This is kind of, you know, wrapping up the news for the day. A lot going on in the world. Lance Armstrong, of course, you know, fresh from his extraordinary showing in the Tour de France, has now taken on politics. He told Time magazine this week he hasn't ruled out entering politics. But beyond this is from Sunday's USA Today. Keep in mind, this is a guy who survived cancer. He had testicular cancer that spread to his brain, and he survived it. And he says, Lance Armstrong, quote, funding for cancer research is tough to come by these days. The biggest downside to a war in Iraq is what could you do with that money? What does a war in Iraq cost a week? $1 billion? Maybe $1 billion a day? The budget for the National Cancer Institute is $4 billion, he says. $4 billion. Now, think about that. $4 billion for an entire year, the budget for the National Cancer Institute. And he points that out. He says, the budget for the National Cancer Institute is $4 billion. That has to change. It needs to become a priority again. Polls say people are much more afraid of cancer than of a plane flying into their house or a bomb or any other form of terrorism. It's a priority for the American public. Lance Armstrong coming out and talking about the cost of the war in Iraq. I mean, keep in mind, $4 billion a year is what we spend on cancer research in the United States. The war in Iraq, well, let's use the right phrase. The invasion, the successful invasion, and the totally bungled occupation of Iraq have so far cost $183,282,426,427,428,433,000. I'm looking at costofwar.com. There's a clock. It's continuously going. In fact, we're now up to $183,282,465,466,000. Now, what does that mean in terms of real dollars? Well, first of all, It means that we're spending just, you know, every couple of days in Iraq, what we spend in an entire year to study and defeat cancer in the United States, a disease that one out of three Americans will get in their lifetime and about one out of five or six will die from. If we look at how that $183,282,541,000, it's now up to $551,000. As I speak, it now just hit $561,000. As we look at what that money could be used for, it's enough money to spend, to send. Now, Head Start, we know that for every dollar spent on Head Start programs, we save about $9 over the lifetime of the child on average, because kids who go to Head Start don't end up in institutions. They don't end up in jail. They don't end up in juvenile detention centers, by and large, where they're far less likely to. They're more likely to complete high school. They're more likely to get a good job and contribute to society and pay their taxes. Every dollar we invest in Head Start, we make $9 back. We know this. This is not speculation. This is not some liberal fantasy. This is well documented. Head Start, one of the most successful programs in history, and of course the Bush administration, therefore, has been aggressively trying to slash funding for Head Start. With the money that we have spent so far in Iraq, and keep in mind that $183,282,000, now it's up to $714,000. $183,282,727,000. With that money, we could have sent $24,275,861 children to a full year of Head Start. That's, you know, rather substantial. We say, okay, what about the number of children in America who have no health insurance? With the money that we have spent just in Iraq so far, we could have insured 109,750,185, 186, 187 children for 1 year. 190, 191, 192, 193, 194, 90, it's that going that fast. Over 109,750,209, 210 children for 1 year. We could have fully insured them. I'm not sure there's that many uninsured children in the United States. With the amount of money that we have spent so far in Iraq, people are worried about, gee, America can't compete. We've got, you know, our jobs going to China, our engineers are coming from India. A big auto factory just got built in Canada, in Toronto, instead of in the United States, a Japanese car manufacturer. We can't compete. Why? Our public schools are in trouble. With just the money that George W. Bush has spent on his misguided invasion and bungled occupation of Iraq, with just that $183,282,956,000 that he has spent so far, and keep in mind that's half the amount that's actually been set aside for him, with just that amount of money that he has spent so far in the last 2 years in Iraq, we could have paid for a full year's salary for 3,176,316 public school teachers. $3 million. I mean, just to reduce it down to one state, one good-sized state. For example, the state of Pennsylvania could have hired 121,600 school teachers for a full year, just with their share, Pennsylvania's share of the war in Iraq, which is $7,020,550,200,300,400, etc. What could we have done with national scholarships? We talk about, you know, we have an uneducated workforce. With $183,223,127,000 that we've spent so far in Iraq, we could have paid for full four-year scholarships at public universities for 8,885,163 children. While the cons are out there trying to whip up middle-class white people to say, oh, no, there's some black people who are getting affirmative action, and therefore some of the white kids are not going to get into college. And they're out there screaming this hysteria. We have spent enough money to send 8 million, 885,166 children, 167 children now, 168 children, 8,885,169 kids to full four-year scholarships at public universities in the United States. Say, well, we have a housing crisis in the United States. Look at all the homeless people. It degrades the quality of life of all of us that some of us are homeless. I would say, I would argue that that was the point of Jesus' message in Matthew 25, if you want to get into the morality of it or the religion of it. Well, what could we have done with the money that we've spent so far in Iraq? Not just the money that's been budgeted. I mean, not even that. That's been about, you know, $300 billion. Just the $183,343,000 that has been spent so far. We could have built 1,650,294 houses. Public housing units. Habitat for Humanity could have solved the homelessness problem in America. You say, well, you know, the problems of the world are much bigger than just America. Aren't you being rather selfish? Yes. In the 24 hours since this time yesterday, 54,000 people in the world have died of starvation. 38,000 of them were children. Just in the 24 hours since this time yesterday. With $183,283,458,000 we have spent so far on the war in Iraq, we could have fed every single hungry person on the planet for a full 7 years. And do you think the world would hate us then? Not that I'm suggesting we bribe them, just that it's the right thing to do. But no, Bush would rather have a war. You get political capital that way, you know. 10 minutes before the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Through the dark I search again for a universal refrain.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you 5 minutes before the hour. Those of you who are in front of a computer, just a little fun thing for the day. Go to Google, www.google.com. And by the way, a tip of the hat to the folks in the chat room who informed me about this. Go to google.com and type in Santorum, S-A-N-T-O-R-U-M, you know the name of the senator, Santorum, and click I Feel Lucky. Just see what happens. I think you'll find it entertaining. You may find it very entertaining. The Bushies, by the way, are changing the name of the so-called war on terrorism. This, one of those things that just is kind of going to slip by. Frank Luntz, apparently, has been doing his focus grouping, his testing, and he has discovered, yes, at google.com, type in Santorum and click I Feel Lucky. And I don't know if that's what Scott is doing in there now or not. But in any case, they have changed the name of the War on Terror. They've decided, War on Terror doesn't work so well. What's happened is people are, you know, getting tired of war. People don't like war. People, you know, enough people have died. Bush started out, I'm the war president. And then he said, well, I don't want to be the war president. And now he wants to be the peace president or something like that. So anyhow, they've fine-tuned this. And, you know, Frank Luntz has run it by a bunch of people and their people meters hooked up to them and figuring out are these little biological things or whatever and figure out, you know, what makes people smile and what makes people afraid and all that kind of stuff. And they've decided to rename it the Global Struggle Against Violent Extremism rather than the Global War on Terror. The Global Struggle Against Violent Extremism. And, of course, the more countries we occupy, the more people we're going to have saying to us, get out of my country, who we can label extremists, and then we can have a larger global struggle against them. But, anyhow, as the New York Times writes, Secretary Rumsfeld, military officials are now starting to talk about the global struggle against violent extremism. They say, if you call it a war, then you think of people in uniform as being the solution. And now Joint Chiefs Chairman General Richard Myers has said he always objected to the term war on terrorism. But in yet another case, the White House not listening to military leadership, notes the Center for American Progress, they've continued to politicize the term over the past 3 years, or the phrase, I'd say. And now they're going to fix it. They're going to clean it up a little bit. Thanks for being with us today. Thanks to Scott for engineering our program, to Louise for producing it, to our folks in our chat room for hanging out with us, and to our callers for calling in. Thanks to Small Dog Electronics and our other sponsors. Thanks to you for being here. We'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. I'm Tom Hartman. Enjoy.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.